This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, November 29th, 2012. I'm Caleb Brown. The struggle over taxes and spending now underway is depressingly narrow, and the prospects for real spending cuts and real tax reform seem quite poor. John Samples, author of the book The Struggle to Limit Government, says reforms in the past have required leaders willing to stand against their own parties.
This debate over spending and taxes seems to, in some ways, be in sort of a bizarro land. That is, there's an abject refusal to reckon with the fact that we have a federal government that is spending well in excess of 20% of GDP, and neither side really seems to be making plans for that number to go down.
Right. There's this sense that there's just a brutal fact out there, right, that spending can't go down any more than what is on the table at any one point. Part of that, I think, is the Dems on their side are seen as a party of a certain kind of spending, government spending. And they are now, the idea that they won the election is pretty abroad in the nation. And so, therefore, that spending doesn't have to be cut. And on the other side, the Republicans remain committed to defense spending, might accept some cuts, but, you know, a significant decrease is off the table. So you're, in a sense, you just feel like you have a split government and you just have this brute fact. The quality of the spending, the necessity, drawing distinctions between vital and non-vital, anything you want to talk about, getting to libertarian elements, none of that gets done. It's just, this is our people, you sense, and we're not going to let them make any sacrifice or whatever. I mean, it's just a brute fact.
Even people like Paul Ryan, who are supposed to be these sort of conservative icon when it comes to reducing spending, for the most part, even in his own budget plan, military spending is just off the table.
Right. I mean, there's this sense, and it's hard not to associate with this, with the idea that the spending is being used to bring about continual re-election of either one or both parties, or also, members in particular constituencies, that whatever their view about the general picture, well, they have this subsidy or this kind of spending, and they're there to protect it, and they would expect or they feel that they can't be re-elected without doing that.
The offer that probably ought to be made from a libertarian perspective is that Republicans should give in on cutting the Pentagon and Democrats should be giving in on cutting entitlement programs. But of course, Republicans like entitlement programs as well, and Democrats like defense spending. And it just seems like a handy foil to toss out there to say, well, I'm sorry, we couldn't get a more substantive deal here, but we just couldn't find areas of agreement, when the fact is that they both seem to like the spending that the other one is fighting to prevent, to save.
At some level, I think that's true. I think probably at some margin, the Democrats are more willing to cut defense spending and maybe some other kinds of maybe even entitlement spending that, remember, Republicans got 56% of the vote over 65 in the election. Some kinds of Medicare spending Dems may be willing to cut. And yes, on the other side, I think there's also with the Republicans, there's an unwillingness to cut some things. But I would add, you know, this all comes down into bargaining between Boehner and President Obama, and they have their numbers, and so that's just where that is. This is not some kind of actual rational process of assessing. I mean, one of the things I would despair about in my time at Cato is finding any evidence at all that Congress or anyone else is doing rational assessment of the spending and whether it produces, you know, benefits in excess of the cost. There's very little evidence that anyone's doing that. In fact, you would think at this moment, though, that's exactly what they should be talking about. And everybody should be able to identify a bunch of programs that have been shown to not be effective, but we're not seeing that.
Okay, from CBS News here, Major Garrett reports that the president has outlined a two-step process to avert fiscal cliff. Republicans must take a move toward preventing a tax increase on households earning less than $250,000 a year, and that has to be done now. And the president and Congress then would work out details of spending cuts at some point later. The spending cuts that are scheduled to go into effect on January 1 mm-hmm. were after a process in which they delegated spending cuts to a group of people, a super committee, because Congress and the president couldn't agree on spending cuts. I mean, it just seems like they're in, you know, it's Groundhog Day in a sense.
Well, you see why a lot of people that I've talked to on the inside think that this is a lot of smoke and mirrors and a lot of talk and posturing, and that what we'll get is some patches, some incremental stuff, and then the can will be kicked down the road. And another sense you get here, and a sense you get from looking at the history of budgeting issues in the last 50 years, is the can gets kicked down the road until the moment at which it's no longer possible because they're afraid that something really bad is happening because they've been kicking the can down the road. However, the economist John Cochran's talked about how you could have a crisis of a run on the dollar, essentially, a loss of confidence in American government. And once that happens, you can't then start making the changes that you need to do all along, but that seems to be, I would guess, the mode that Congress operates in.
Libertarians ought to be interested in the structure of any deal if one were to emerge. But you have written extensively about the 1986 tax reform and how that came about and what I think your standard bearer conservatives and libertarians ought to think about it. We had a lot of deductions go away, mm-hmm. But we also had rates go down.
Right. That's what attracted Reagan to it. Initially, Reagan was attracted to the idea for the 84 election. He thought Democrats were going to use it against him. So he wanted to have an idea about it. Then it got into the actual policy process after Reagan was reelected. And you ended up with about a shifting of getting rid of about $125 billion in 1985 dollars of tax preferences. Now, this shifted things around. Some people, businesses, saw higher taxes. But people, since there was, the overall aggregate stayed the same, people who would pay, you could finance that with lower rates. You could finance lower rates that way, and that's what Reagan kept his eye on, and that's what's being talked about this time. The politics of it in 86 was a little idiosyncratic. I mean, not only the fact that Reagan really made the difference, standing against his own party at times. In a sense, also, they snuck up on all of the concentrated interest. It just was sort of thrown on them when Bob Packwood, who had traditionally been a very strong supporter of the tax regime, changed his mind, turned on people that the lobbyists he had known for some time, and managed to get the whole thing through. This time, things are different. Tax reform is widely discussed. The people whose oxes will be gored know about it. They are organizing. They will be organizing through over the next month or so and throughout the next year. So you can't really get the jump on them the way that it happened in 1986. So I think that's an important difference. I mean, things like, for example, you have to remember in 86, a lot of the big numbers in tax reform were taken off the table. Not only the mortgage deduction, but things like states, the deductibility of state taxes, which is a real subsidy for high-tax states. That was on the table originally, but it got taken off the table when governors showed up and sort of barged into the negotiations.
You were talking about President Reagan standing against his party in order to get the deal done. President Obama and others have said, look, we've put a lot of things on the table. And what they're talking about is asking high-income earners to pay higher tax rates.
Right.
But that's presented as we're putting something on the table. But I think everybody understands what it means to put something on the table. It really means spending political capital.
Right. And also, it does seem that in this case, the president is a very different person. He seems just as much as Reagan's priority was lower rates, his priority and, basic idea is that you have to raise taxes in one way or the other on 3% of the population. And so he seems to be going at that either just through rate. So he's looking for increased rates, or the tax reform is not to make it more neutral, more fair, or more productive, but rather as a way to get, because of the way the tax preferences are, to shift the cost of government onto that 3%. So we've got it's a different circumstance in that regard. There were two other things about the 86 reform that I think are not well known, but do give you pause too at this moment. One was that in the 2 or 3 months after it was passed, there was polling about it. And it was not especially popular. It was not something that people overwhelmingly supported. They weren't overwhelmingly against it, but it wasn't something that caught public excitement. The second thing is, perhaps more seriously, I mean, it's not that you got lower rates and fewer deductions. You got rid of all the interest group messes and so on, and waste that goes with that. But you didn't get persistent lower rates. What you got was a broader tax base, and then just a few years later, you got higher rates again. So if you got lower rates out of this somehow, the history tells you that you have to be wary about there being more rates, more higher rates on a broader base, which means more taxes as a percentage of our national wealth. And, of course, for libertarians, that's definitely something we don't want to see.
John Samples is director of the Cato Institute Center for Representative Government. You can get his most recent book, The Struggle to Limit Government, at cato.org.